A grand conception. The third method of attack which Hazrat Mirza Sahib employed to bring about the triumph of Islam over other religions was his exposition of a grand conception taught by Islam. This conception relates to the attitude of each religion towards other religions. Before Hazrat Mirza Sahib's time, it was common, in fact, it was thought just and right for each religion to regard other religions and their followers as false. Excepting some individuals and some groups, all Jews believed Jesus to be a liar. All Christians believed the Holy Prophet, peace be on him, of Islam to be so. Zoroastrians regarded the prophets of the other faiths in the same way. And the other religions in their turn treated the Zoroastrian prophet similarly. Followers of each of the four faiths regarded the other religious teachers as false, and the followers of these religions regarded the founders of the four as false, and so on. Disputes between religion and religion had become most degrading. Each religious community was at war with every other, and yet sensible persons could spot evidence of truth in all religions. In any case, it seemed cruel to regard the founders of religious traditions as false. One could not easily persuade oneself to think so. But was there a solution? The result of these disputes was the increase of rancor and religious antagonism. Hindus read about their own religious teachers and were moved by their great moral and spiritual qualities. Yet, they heard others say that those teachers were liars and pretenders. This surprised them as much as it annoyed them. Naturally, they thought the detractors were actuated by malice and by unwillingness to understand. Similarly, the followers of other religions read about their own founders and were persuaded of their spiritual qualities, and when they heard them abused, they were enraged. An insuperable difficulty had arisen. How could respect and reverence for religious teachers be established? Those who examined the question without prejudice and without preconceptions could not think that the universal God would choose one people for his favors and forget all the others. Nobody dared say so. However, each religious group thought that to accept the founders of other religious groups amounted to a repudiation of their own religious position. Liberal Hindus invented a solution. They began to teach that all religions are from God. Different religions are like different routes leading to the same goal. And the Hindu religion was the best of these routes. This ingenious solution was open to two serious objections, and these seemed unanswerable. The first objection was that if all religions, as we find them today, are from God and lead ultimately to Him, why do their teachings differ on vital and important matters? There could be differences on matters of detail, but there should be no difference on fundamentals. Many roads may lead to a mansion, but it would be absurd to think that the roads coming from the east should reach it via the west, or the north, or the south. They can suffer small divergences, but their general direction should be the same. In fundamental and abiding truths, there can be no great disagreement or difference. There can be differences, for instance, in modes of worship, in details of religious duty, and so on, but it is difficult to imagine that to the Jews and the Muslims, God said, "I am one," while to the Zoroastrians, He said, "I am two." To the Christians, "I am three." To the Hindus, "I am many." To the Chinese, "I am everywhere and everything." Nor is it possible that to one group, the Muslims, God should declare that he transcends all things and is far from incarnating himself even in human frame. To another, the Christians, that he could certainly incarnate himself in the human frame. And to yet another, the Hindus, even in the frames of lower animals. Nor can it be that to the Muslims he should teach that life after death is inevitable, and to the Jews that it is not. Nor that he should say it one time to Islam, that the dead cannot return to life, at another to Hindus that they can, and that after death human beings pass into a series of lives. In short, it is possible that teachings which come from God may show slight variations depending upon the people addressed, their time, surroundings, and so on. But there can be no vital difference, no disagreement in the description of historical events, for instance, or in the content of the basic propositions. Religious teachings as we find them today differ from one another not just in detail, but also in fundamentals. Differences of a fundamental character cannot be attributed to a universal God, and religious teachings which are so very different from one another cannot all lead to him. The second objection to this liberal Hindu conception is that in some sense Hindus regard their own religion as superior to others, even though those others may also lead eventually to God. The Hindu religion is the best, the oldest, and so on. This is a very difficult position. If God had revealed the best religion in the beginning, what need was there to reveal after it religions that were less than the best? If mankind were capable of receiving and benefiting from a perfect religion in the very beginning, there was no point in sending inferior religions in subsequent times. It seems contrary to reason to think that the best religion should have come in the infancy of the human race, and that later on, when human sciences and arts had become more advanced, we should have inferior religions. It is more reasonable to think that the later religions should be more perfect, more advanced than the earlier ones, or if not more, at least as perfect, as good. These two difficulties were insuperable. For those who proposed to reconcile religions in the Hindu way, the important question was, what exactly was God's arrangement for the guidance of mankind from the earliest times to today? The Christians also presented a solution to the problem of conflicting religions. They said that God invited the whole of mankind to his guidance. He did this through Jesus Christ. God had no favorites. For him, all sections of humanity were equally deserving of his help and guidance. But even this solution did not solve the difficulty. The question still remained, what had God done for the guidance of mankind before he sent down Jesus? From the Bible, we learn that the message of Jesus Christ was meant for Israel, not for others. However, even if it is true that Christian teachers later on addressed the Christian message to all peoples of the world, the question remains, what did God do for the many millions of human beings who had gone before Jesus? Had they gone without divine guidance? The message of Jesus could not reach those who had lived and died before his time. The question had no satisfactory answer, therefore. The status of different religious messages had to be defined. Without a just definition of status, the different religions found themselves involved in unending war with one another. Hazrat Mirza Sahib turned to the Holy Quran for an answer to this question and presented a new outlook, a new standpoint. The Holy Quran says, وَإِمْ مِنْ أُمَّةٍ إِلَّا خَلَا فِيهَا نَذِيرٍ. And there is no people to whom a warner has not come. According to this teaching, there has not been a single people at any time in history or anywhere in the world who have not had a warner from God, a teacher, a prophet. According to the Holy Quran, there have been prophets at all times and in all countries. India, China, Russia, Afghanistan, parts of Africa, Europe, America, all had prophets according to the theory of divine guidance taught by the Holy Quran. When therefore Muslims hear about prophets of other peoples or other countries, they do not deny them. They do not brand them as liars. Muslims believe that other peoples have had their teachers. If other peoples have had prophets, books, and laws, these constitute no difficulty for Islam. They only confirm the universalistic conception Islam has taught. However, Islam teaches that the earlier teachings were commensurate with the needs and capacities of earlier peoples. The perfect teaching, which God eventually sent through the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of God be on him, came at a time when mankind was sufficiently advanced to receive and to benefit from such a teaching. The Holy Prophet was sent to all mankind. This conception of divine teaching is the most comprehensive we can have. No people are left out of the plan of divine guidance. Today, Islam is the only way, the only guide, because it is the last and the most perfect. With the arrival of the most perfect teaching, earlier teachings must be superseded. Their supersession is not only inevitable according to the Islamic teaching, it is also a patent fact of history. The books of earlier religions have been without divine protection. They have suffered from human interpolation and extrapolation. They have become distorted. They are still true because of their divine origin, but they are also false because of the distortions they have suffered since. This conception of divine teaching over the ages, which Hazrat Mirza Sahib expounded out of the Holy Quran, proved irresistible. Should anyone choose to reject this conception, he will have to admit that God gives guidance to some people, but not to others, an idea no man with sound common sense can accept. If, however, it is admitted that God's guidance has been received everywhere, at all times, then the truth of Islam cannot be questioned. Because Islam is the last religion, and it is Islam which teaches how God's guidance reached different peoples in different times. This view of God's guidance has a peculiar appeal. Men of education and wide sympathies subscribing to any religious views are impressed and persuaded by it. They find that the conception is not easy to deny. The denial of it entails denial of God. If they cannot deny God, nor the Islamic conception of God's guidance, they have to accept Islam. They have no other alternative. The narrow and confused view of divine guidance which prevailed before was changed into a genuinely liberal, clearly formulated view of divine guidance by the promised Messiah. This, among other things, made for the victory of Islam in our time.